All right, what are we starting with?
So today is Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So I actually want to say some stuff about Rosh Chodesh Iyar, too. Mm-hmm. Which book of our heritage is that? Did I bring that one? I hope. No, of course I didn't. Okay. So this is Rosh Chodesh Iyar is when the mun started to fall.
The mun.
Mun in Hebrew, manna in English.
Oh, okay. All
so
right.
That food that fell from heaven, the food of Emuna, that fell from heaven for the time that we were in the desert. So it ended up being 40 years, but it really started out just to be the beginning between the Exodus and receiving of the Torah, because that was part of the transformational process. If you think about it, so we have this double birth process, right, that we discussed before. That's one reason why we eat eggs at the Seder, because eggs are hatched, chicks are hatched twice. Born twice. First they come out of the chicken as an egg, and then it incubates, and then it hatches. So it's a second birth when the chick actually comes out of the shell.
Okay, so wait, this is when it actually began to fall? They've been in the Bamidbar already about 2 weeks. So were they
eating? They were hungry.
They were eating their stores of food.
They must have been eating their stores of food,
yeah. So they weren't getting their manna immediately. See, I never knew that.
No, I didn't.
Right, so my understanding is, according to Book of Our Heritage, Eliyahu Kitov, who I trust, it started to fall on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, which was the first Shabbos after the Exodus.
Oh,
how did that work?
It's been 2 weeks already.
Yeah, how did that work?
Yeah.
Must be after the whole long process of getting
right.
out.
Like 16 days.
Right, yeah, 16 right. days exactly. in summer. Right, for sure. Yeah. Today we're 16.
Yeah, today is 16.
And so that was, right. So yeah, 16 is the Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Pardon?
Took them some time to get to.
Took some time to get out and to get to where they're going. That's why I wish I brought that one with me. That's what it said.
Their own food. They were
maybe. They're reading the matzah.
But how could they have brought 2 weeks worth?
Worth of food.
All right,
yeah.
So I'll have to double check that. So I wish I would have brought that with me. Anyway, so the mun itself is considered, in a way, like breast milk, that it was not a food from which there was any waste product. It was fully absorbed. Our Rav gave us a little talk a few weeks ago that included, I guess it was his Shabbos HaGadol Drasha. He said there's really three foods that are like that, breast milk and mun and karbanos. That when you eat a karban, also it's fully absorbed and there's no waste from that because it's feeding a different aspect.
So, well, but that's right. interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the meat from the sacrifice, right?
But breast milk, I mean, infants do void and they have...
Right, so the water comes out and the bowel movement that comes out, first of all, from just breast milk is not really smelly. It's totally different once they switch into food.
Yeah, but I wouldn't go...
It's not. It's very different. It's
yeah,
very different.
I know it is. It is yeah. different.
There's so no he point. Says, and he says, I mean, so I'm not 100% sure because I didn't check the science, but he said that scientifically it is all absorbed what's coming out, and certainly from our own selves, if we want to discuss that subject, the bulk of what comes out is bacteria, not actually food waste. It's all bacteria that are in your gut. That's about 2/3 of what's coming out.
Really?
Yeah. Is okay. bacteria. Yeah, it's a lot.
We have a lot in our guts,
and that we just shed that because we keep growing that inside.
That's why you have to replenish it if you take antibiotics.
Yes, that's why you have to replenish it if you take antibiotics, right. Mm-hmm. So it could be that for babies who are just having breast milk, it's just the bacteria that's coming out, that the actual food itself is being fully absorbed. Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, the mun was considered fully absorbed, and they didn't eliminate in the desert, apparently, although there's rules on how to eliminate, but apparently they didn't have
to.
At
all. Huh.
Right. So,
kept it from getting polluted.
Right. Right. Because that could be very messy for everybody.
For 40 years, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Depending upon the area
right.
in which they wandered.
Right.
You didn't urinate either?
Well, they must have.
I don't know.
But remember, that's sterile.
Yeah, that's sterile.
Uh-huh. So
right.
That's not the same. It's not
right.
the same as...
Right.
As
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I know it's disgusting to us to think about, but it is sterile.
Very,
right.
Very interesting
concept. Right. So that's when... So, but, and from... I guess it started... Well, maybe it wasn't Rosh Chodesh Iyar, because it's from the first Shabbos from the Exodus.
See, that's different.
The first... Right. It's the first Shabbos of the Exodus, but it could be that the Exodus just took a while... I have to recheck. Anyway, the first Shabbos afterwards, whatever it was, I think he said it was Rosh Chodesh Iyar, is when the mun started to fall. But whether it was then or from that first Shabbos, or if they were the same day, the point is that first Shabbos is when the mun started to fall, and from then we've been keeping Shabbos consecutively. So that's how we know for sure when Shabbos is. Because if you think about it, if Shabbos is supposed to be the seventh day, and it's counted the seventh day from creation, nobody was there to count time. Right? So nobody knew exactly what day was the first day and what day was the seventh day to keep Shabbos. Even though there was a tradition, clearly, Avraham and the Avos, they did keep Shabbos. But the clarity of the time, so that we know crystal clear for sure when Shabbos is, that's when the mun didn't fall. Right? It fell double portion on Fridays. That's why we have two challahs. Double portion on Fridays, the two challahs represent that on Shabbos, and not at all on Shabbos. So we knew for sure that God told us that's when Shabbos is. So since then, there's always been somebody keeping Shabbos, so we haven't broken that, we haven't lost that tradition of what day of the week it is. Right, so we do know for sure. Okay, that being said, I guess I will just jump into this thing. I want to discuss the Shlissel challah a little bit.
The what?
The Shlissel challah.
I don't know what that is.
The key, right, key in the challah. Apparently there's quite a bit of controversy over this. So that's what I want to discuss, because it has to do with one of our mitzvot. So we're going to start with the mitzvah that it discusses, but it ties into a mitzvah that we learned, I think, last week, too. So the mitzvah that it ties into is the 260...
The 262. Page 161.
Which is the final one in Sedrat Kedoshim. The prohibition against following the customs and the ways of the Amorites, which is extended to all non-Jewish nations. Even though the Pasuk says, and you shall not walk in the custom of the nation which I'm casting out before you, which refers specifically to the Amorites in Leviticus 20:23, but the way that it's phrased in Hebrew is shelo lalechet bechukot hagoyim. Don't go in the ways, the chok, right? We know that halachically, legally, a chok is a law that we keep that we don't really know why it is, kashrut, or the red heifer, or shatnez, those are all chokes, right? But a chok is a way of behaving also.
Right.
So don't go in the chokes of the goyim. Don't behave like them. Right, so now the question is, what is Shlissel challah? And there's been quite a bit of conversation in the community about it, because this is the first year that I've ever seen a whole Hafreshes challah event around it, and what's going on, and they had one on the east side, one on the west side, one on the southeast, and the email that went around, I was surprised to see the email that went around, although I didn't make a phone call and object to it, because I didn't really think about it, but yesterday I got quite a bit of flack for being an uneducated west sider from some east siders.
You?
I know, well, it was fascinating. Well, I did misspeak, it was interesting, so I'll tell you that this is what happened. So, the email that went around said, there is a segula after the Shabbos after Pesach to make
what's
a key, to make a ki challah. Hang on a second. Right. There's a segula to make a ki challah the Shabbos after Pesach. Okay, that's a Shlissel challah. Shlissel is key in Yiddish. A key, yeah. Like you open the door with a key.
A key challah. I've never even heard of it.
Shlissel. Shlissel or Shlissel, Shlissel. Shlissel challah. That's what it's called. Shlissel challah. Okay, so this is a minhag. Now, I looked up in, I have two different books about minhagim, so I'll read to you. It was not in this one, The Minhagim by Avraham Schill, but it is in Right and Reason, and just a little bit about it. So I'll read you what it says here. The special challahs after the Shabbos after Pesach. Maybe they're moved, hopefully. On the Shabbos after Pesach, some follow the practice of eating a special lechem mishnah on which is drawn the form of a key made of sesame seeds. Others make little indentations in the key before it is baked. Reasons. So that's the custom. Reasons. One, this is in remembrance of the manna, which began falling for the children of Israel in the wilderness during the month of Iyar, and in remembrance of the key of livelihood, which we are so urgently in need of. Ever since the manna stopped falling, that key is in the hands of the Almighty. Right, so you start it basically when the mun started falling, just to remember that the mun stopped falling and that we do turn to Hashem. He has the key. So there's three keys that Hashem holds directly. That's the key of parnasa, of livelihood, the key of resurrection, tchiyat hametim, the raising of the dead, and the key of conception and birth, right, of bringing children into the world. Those are the three keys that Hashem holds directly that he has not delegated. So this is the key. This Shlissel challah represents the key of parnasa, of livelihood, financial livelihood. And tied into the mun, which is livelihood, right? So number two, I'll go back to that in a minute. Number two, during the days of Sfiras HaOmer, we count 49 days until the festival of Shavuos, the 50th day. According to Kabbalistic teaching, these 50 days correspond to the 50 gates of understanding. Every day we progress from gate to gate, and for every gate there is a key. This is why we place the form of a key on our challah loaves on this Shabbos.
You actually bake it inside.
Okay, so this is how I misspoke, right? So first of all, there's a whole conversation in this class that I take with Rabbi Unger Sunday morning. So as soon as I mentioned Schlissel challah, the other women went nuts. They're totally anti-segula, these ladies.
Segula.
Okay, I'm not translating yet. Okay.
You did it last time.
Hang on, I will in just a minute. So they went nuts, and I said, well, there's actually, they said, well, it's so ridiculous baking a key on the challah, it's a pagan custom. And I said, actually, there's a machloket about, and I was about to say, there's a machloket about how you do it. There's three ways to do it. One is to bake the challah in the shape of a key, one is to put sesame seeds on it in the shape of a key, and one is to actually bake a key in the challah. But as soon as I said I was going to finish that sentence, there's a machloket, and one of them like gave me a little hitch. Said machloket. What I meant to say was there's three different minhagim about how one might make a schlissel challah.
Hi.
Good. I'm just trying to figure out how to pause. I wish I could, but.